Thank you for listening to the serialized podcast version of The Mark of a Druid, a fiction fantasy novel written and read by Rhonda R. Carpenter. I suggest that you start the story at the beginning, and to be sure that you get all of the episodes, go to themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Episode 10, Chapter 15, The Making of a Man, Part 1. The three-hour drive home allowed the car's heater to sufficiently dry the front of Ryerson's clothing. But no matter where he aimed the vent, his backside was still drenched to the skin. The seat was saturated to its springs. The puddle on the floorboard squished beneath his feet and seeped up the carpeting all the way to the shifter. With every kilometer, he became more annoyed by the squishing sound emanating from under his feet. It was just another reminder he didn't know how he ended up at the stone circle. Nestled in the seclusion of the ruddy tree-covered foothills, the Henge was virtually untouched. Sugarloaf Mountain loomed over it, a silent protector. The circle was well off the beaten path. He was fairly sure it wasn't on any of the tourist maps. He parked his car at almost 8:30 in the evening and made his way into the house. Work came early tomorrow, and he needed rest. At the very least, Ryerson could be thankful for two things. The wolf didn't attack him, and the shower was hot enough to take the chill off. The bed was inviting, and he slipped between the sheets with a sigh. Where's the day gone? What was I doing? And why did I end up there, of all places? Ryerson owed Craig an apology. He knew that much, but decided it could wait until morning. He tried to avoid the images which invaded his memory, but failed, cascading once again into the life of Adam. Since the dawn of time, the rite of passage from boy to man had changed very little in the druid tradition. The test that lay before Adam could kill, and he was strongly aware of that fact tonight. The boys would all be tested on every level. Character, stamina, wit, their bodies, minds, and spirits pushed to the very breaking point. May the gods look kindly on us all. May the night birds lull us to sleep. May the moonbeams brightly light our paths. May the dawn greet us all. May the trees cast down their branches for us. May the water flow from the belly of our mother and nurture us. May the land yield bountiful harvests unto us all. May the sun shine its light upon us. May the songs of our people be sung forever. May the fire of our hearths warm us until we die. May the wind carry us all safely into the next life. Adam uttered the ancient invocation, standing naked beneath the stars, with only his brat for warmth. Six boys in all from the clan stood with him. This was it. All his training come to this. The excitement and fear hung heavily in the air, with a stench so thick and musty it threatened to choke off his breath. Adam hoped he was prepared for this night. The rituals of man-making were whispered amongst the boys. Although none of them knew what was going to happen for sure, they all knew it would not be easy. The council approached the boy to Adam's right, and he, Batar, shook with fear. The boy to Adam's left, Carmag, stood unwavering. With his shoulders squared and his chest sticking out like a barrel, Carmag was stoic. Nevertheless, as Adam watched Batar shake next to him, he thought of how many things had changed over the last sun cycle. Batar and Adam had grown up together. They studied at the feet of the same teachers. During those years, the friends had talked of the time when they would be men and the things they would do together. Tonight was different. Not all of the boys would succeed in their tasks. The choosing of partners was about to seal their fates, and for good or bad, they would be bound to their partners for life from this moment forward. The wheel of life was about to come full circle. If they survived, it would be the beginning of a new era, which would lead them forward soon enough. Arthviel had spoken very seriously of Adam's choosing. Now the hood of the old druid's brat hid his somber face as he approached the boys with the other council members. He had advised Adam to choose a partner that would balance his skills from instinct. Arthfiel had warned him not to choose from friendship or from old pledges made when youth was in power. His words rang in Adam's ears as the council approached. When he first considered his choices, Adam had almost chosen his closest friend, Batar. They had spent every day learning the same lessons. For many years, they had been the best of friends, until last season, when Arthfiel had begun the shapeshifting training with Adam. Batar had wanted so desperately to learn the secretive art of form transformation, but he had not been chosen. Arthfiel had said Batar was not meant for the life of a changeling. Since that decision, Adam was unable to share his every thought with his friend. The ways of a shapeshifter were held in the most sacred confidence. This had strained the boy's relationship, but when the news of Adam's father's return was announced, Batar had stopped speaking to Adam altogether. Adam had discussed it with Carmag at midday, and they agreed. While they were not the best of friends, they were not enemies either. Adam had not been trained as a warrior. Even so, he was not completely inept with weapons. At least, he didn't think so. Carmag had not been trained as a changeling, but his mind was sharp and his intellect keen. Carmag's strength and prowess with weapons complimented Adam's ability to reason quickly. Adam had hoped his father would have arrived by now. The boy so wanted to make the great man proud. The ground beneath the boy's bare feet held the rhythm of the tune the council sang. Adam's heart drummed the same beat. The council advanced. Their song became louder and deeper. He spoke softly to Carmag. "We are a people who sing. We sing the songs of the wind, the sky, and of fire, and of the water, and of the earth. We are druids, and in being so, we are one with the elements, which make up each man's body and spirit. Listen to the rhythm of the earth. Make it one with your mind. The knowing of this will get us through tonight, Carmag. They show us the way. Listen." Carmag's response was a simple nod of the head and a flash of a crooked smile. The low baritone chants echoed in every fiber of every body. "The boys are near, creators of all that is known. Mark this night, one of great joy. When the sun changes forms, let them have worked as one. The boys are near. Let the wind whisper their true names. Let the trees turn their leaves. The goddess of water can choose. Like the stone, they must not yield. The boys are near. Call to the creators, singing praises. Let these boys turn to men. May their worth be shown. Let the moon rise as the challenge begins." While the chanting continued, the environment obeyed. The leaves of the trees turned over as if there were to be a great storm. Their soft, silvery undersides were exposed to the elements. The wind whispered his name. Adam. One by one, each boy was approached by Arthfiel and asked the same question. "Who shall it be that you shall choose to stand by your side?" When he asked this of Adam, the boy's answer was swift and clear. "Carmag of the spear." From the corner of his eye, Adam saw Batar's shoulders slump and his head drop. When Carmag was asked, his answer did not waver. "Adam of the Amber Eyes." "So be it. You are linked in this lifetime and all others. You shall always meet again." And so it went with each candidate. The boys were led to the center of the great grove in their chosen pairs. They were stripped of their brats and scrubbed with a mixture of mugwort, vervain, and yarrow, then left for the wind to dry them. The elders slapped at their bodies with leafy branches cut from willow and spruce trees. This would remove any malevolent energies that may have been lingering within them. Each set of partners was placed back to back, tied elbow to elbow and ankle to ankle. One could not move without taking the other with him. Arthfiel's voice rang out, "There are times when we must work as one to achieve our desires. You must find a way to work in harmony without breaking the bonds which bind you. Your task is to get to the other side of the river by moonset. Adam's mind began to reel. The river was deep. How in the name of the gods could they swim, bound together? Carmag made a move to walk, and Adam was dragged behind him. Carmag, we must do this together. We must first learn how to walk as one. One single step at a time. Adam shook one leg. Start with this one. Carmag took a step forward. Adam, awkwardly stiff-legged and backward, allowed him to lead. By the time they'd mastered the walk, the pair had reached the river's edge. Adam, I cannot swim, Carmag said, a quiver in his voice. Yes, Carmag. Neither can I with my arms and legs tied to yours. Let me think. We can't swim. I can't support your weight for any extended period of time. One good thing is that this is not the deepest part of the river. I think we can make it across. How? Carmag sounded hopeful. We can jump, right? Right, came Carmag's hesitant answer. We walk out as far as possible. We go under the water, springing together from the bottom, kicking our legs from the hip, not the knees, and paddling with our arms from the shoulders. When our heads come out of the water, we breathe. When our heads go under the water, we hold our breath until we come up again. The one thing we must not do is fight against each other. Adam could feel determination return to Carmag in the lift of his broad shoulders. We must breathe together, not just jump together. Let's test how it will work here before we get into the water, Adam said. Jump, breathe, hold, jump, breathe, and hold. The boys repeated the process, which might just get them across the river. Do you think we have the rhythm? Adam asked Carmag. He simply grunted. A soon-to-be man of few words, Adam hoped. They moved to the river, clumsily wading in almost to their shoulders. On the next step, Adam, we will be underwater. We can do this, was all Carmag said before their heads went under the water for the first time. The ground beneath their feet fell quickly away. The boys touched bottom and both pushed off at the same time. Their heads popped out of the water. They both inhaled deeply, without a delay. Then they were under the river again. The cold water engulfed their naked bodies and slowed their muscles. The boys touched the bottom and pushed themselves forward again and again. They sank further and further from jump to jump. The river got deeper and deeper. While they propelled themselves forward past the halfway point, their feet connected with a sunken log. It was heavily branched, and their bare feet slipped, throwing off the rhythm they had mastered. The ropes at their ankles snagged a limb, preventing the pair from rising to the surface. Adam could hear the panic in the muffled moan from Carmag. Adam persisted in flapping his arms from his shoulders, and Carmag struggled against him. Then he followed Adam's movements. He kicked from the hip and pulled away from the tangle. Using the current, he lifted his arms in time with his partner. The branch broke, and they struggled desperately to the surface, sucking in air and trying to tread water as the river carried them further downstream. They sank, touching bottom more quickly than expected. The thin, slick silt on the riverbed changed to a thick, sucking mud. As suddenly as the river had become deep, it became shallow. When their heads rose above the surface again, Carmag choked out two words. Almost there. Adam heard him suck in air. The sudden presence of gravel beneath Adam's feet told him Carmag was right. Shivering and breathless, the boys made their way to the bank. Adam and Carmag fell to their sides on the shore. The water had filled their ears and noses. Arthiel was there to cut their bonds. He remained expressionless when his eyes met Adam's. He gave no indication of how they had fared this first part of the testing. Carmag stood, held one nostril closed, then blew the air from his lungs through his nose. Large quantities of mucus and water flew through the air, and then he did the same for the other side. A hearty laugh followed. Arthiel simply said, "You will both stand guard for the others," and thrust the dirk hilt into Carmag's hand. They were the first pair to make the crossing. Looking back to the other side, Adam could see Batar and Lorsen moving through the water close to their destination. Their style was different, but accomplishing the same goal. They had chosen to swim in gangly, awkward strokes, their heads cresting the water every few heartbeats. When they reached solid ground, they were winded and choking, but alive. They stumbled out of the water, pulling against each other like two women fighting in the marketplace. Adam and Carmag made their way to them and released the ropes that held Lorsen and Batar together. Batar looked at Adam with hatred, or maybe it was pain in his eyes, then stepped away and turned his back on his old friend. Batar complained to Lorsen in a low voice, "Do not look to Adam for support or help. He is no one's friend." Lorsen looked confused, but stuck to his partner's side as he knew he should. Adam looked at Arthfiel and the other council members watching from the trees while the remaining set of boys came to the opposite edge of the river. The last to cross were Dahl and Fagin. When they reached the halfway point of the river, Adam could see they were in trouble, but the council made no move to help. Chapter 16, Catalina. This chapter will be continued in Episode 11. Eve's eyelids fluttered open. She focused on the dim shafts of light streaming through the wooden shutters of the hotel room. Andrea sat quietly on the rattan love seat and watched her, head tilted to one side, her chin resting on her hands, knees pulled up to her chest. Rays of light wove golden highlights into her auburn hair, leaving her face in an unnatural shadow. "You awake now?" she asked, not giving Eve a chance to answer. "Eve, I've been thinking about what you told me last night. I have an idea about what might be causing these bruises." She looked at her friend with an expression of deep concern. "I'm very worried about you. I've never seen you so afraid. You're withdrawn and either unable or unwilling to, well, what you told me last night. It was just a small part of these dreams, wasn't it?" "Yes." Eve touched the journal that still lay beside her under the blankets. She had hoped that telling Andrea about Alian would have sparked something. Then maybe Eve wouldn't be so alone. It had been a selfish thought, but the fact was that Eve really told her friend very little. A rush of guilt swept over her, and she lowered her gaze from Andrea's face. "I'm not sure why, but something feels very familiar about all this," Andrea said. "I wish I could tell you what it was, but, well, I can't." She dropped her feet to the floor and shrugged. "Could anyone have a connection to these dreams besides me? Or was I truly alone? Was it even a good idea to involve Andrea?" Eve didn't know. She looked up, hoping to find the answer in Andrea's eyes. What she found instead was the questioning look of a therapist who was waiting for the client to get what had been said. "Eve, I may know what's happening to you," she said with the stomp of her foot. She gave no time for this statement to saturate Eve's fuzzy brain before she rattled on. "I've only heard of a few scattered cases of spontaneous physical regression. These were described in several articles in an old psychology journal. I may have a copy of it at home. It was a little-known study run by a psychiatrist using hypnotic techniques with trauma victims. Anyway, if I remember correctly, several of the subjects had spontaneous regressions with physical reactions. Your subconscious mind may be regressing you to another lifetime while you dream." Andrea whirled around to face Eve, looking her friend squarely in the eyes. As she spun, her hair lifted and followed her turn with only a fraction of a delay, like russet-colored leaves drifting to the ground in fall. Eve felt like she was just as out of control as one of the leaves. What are you saying? It's some kind of psychosis?" Eve's voice quivered. "I won't tell you that the thought didn't occur to me." She said this with such sympathy in her voice. It cracked, and she had to clear her throat. "But I sat up all night long going over what I know to be true about you. I don't believe you would hurt yourself. Or anyone else, for that matter. I've known you for a long time, Eve. You're dedicated to your work, a caring and helpful friend, and you have a very special place in my heart. If there is one thing I know about you and me, it's that we have, from the moment we met, we've been more than sisters to each other. We have a bond that most blood sisters don't share." Shaking her head, she said, "No, I don't believe you did this to yourself. I do believe that in some way, and don't ask me how I know this, but I think Alian has something to do with this bond. Just from the small amount you told me, I feel connected. It's very strange. Eve's mouth opened and then closed. She wanted to tell Andrea she was right. She wanted to tell her about Athene. But before she could say anything, Andrea cut her off by lifting a hand, gesturing for Eve to stand. She pulled Eve to her, wrapping her arms around her battered friend. That much-needed embrace was calming. Tears trickled down Eve's cheeks. Eve, I love you. You're part of me, closer than if you were my blood. So it's my honor to help you. While I think about how to do that, let's get out of this room and get some breakfast. Maybe the fresh air will clear our heads. The women dressed and casually walked down the terracotta steps to the street. The fresh salt air coming off the bay filled their nostrils, and a chilly breeze brought a shiver. Rounding the corner, they stepped into a charming little cafe called Sally's Waffle House. The place was so small, the waitress had to turn her large body sideways just to walk around the corner to the booth. Honey, I hope you had that no-good SOB locked up for hitting such a pretty face. The waitress's voice had every head turned in Eve's direction. Eve quietly ordered. There was no way to have a private conversation, so Eve held her questions as they ate. They spoke to each other only to comment on the food, which was excellent. Andrea finished, setting her fork down on her plate with a huge sigh. Let's take a walk, Eve. After that huge waffle, I won't be able to button my jeans in the morning if I don't walk it off. She winked at Eve and flipped a 20 onto the table. Eve smiled and nodded at her friend's wink, feeling a little euphoric. She didn't feel so alone. She knew Andrea was by her side, even if she had her doubts concerning Eve's sanity. As long as Eve was not alone in the world, she had hope. Eve's mind sailed through possibilities. If this was a memory, then accessing it should be quite easy. But why? Why would my subconscious mind show me this? And what connection to the present should these experiences have? Andrea tapped Eve's hand. Hey, come on, let's go. Eve placed the huge sunglasses on to cover the now very black eye. Her wrists were healing at an astonishing rate. The torn skin was gone, and now there were just dark marks from the bruising. The friends strolled along Crescent Street, passing a myriad of small shops that were on the left, and the shimmering blue of Avalon Bay on the right. The sidewalks and streets were overlaid all the way to the edge of the sand with tightly fitted pavers, each fashioned in subtle shades of dark rose and pink with flecks of black. Neither of the women said much. Eve's mind spun as she recapped the last few days in her mind. Yesterday, my best friend thought I was insane or hurting myself. I can't even imagine hurting myself. The dreams seemed to be getting more intense. Eve shuddered at the thought of what might come with the next one. They turned from the cobbled street onto the beach. The harbor sparkled gold and amber with sunlight. Beautiful day, Eve muttered. Yes, it is. Smell that salt air. No smog here, Andrea replied. Nope. The conversation stopped as if it were a derailed train. Eve, until now we haven't been looking at this on anything but a purely physical level. I wonder what would happen if we took control of the dream. You know, did some hypnosis. Eve stared blankly as she watched her friend walk further from her. For God's sake, why didn't I think of that? What I mean is, why don't we take control of these experiences? We could go buy a tape recorder and tapes, lock ourselves in the room for a day, and use our combined knowledge to get to the bottom of this. That is what we do for others. I can't believe that I didn't suggest it after the first set of marks appeared on your wrists, she said, slapping her forehead. Until that moment, she hadn't even noticed Eve had stopped. Well, now we know why my forehead is flat, Eve hurried to catch up with Andrea. She came face to face with her friend and asked, So, you think it could be a past life that is spontaneously creeping into my dream states? Or maybe what? Cellular memory retention? My body is physically reacting to the memories my subconscious mind is dreaming. Being tied up, the birthmark, being hit in the face. Andrea, I want to see those articles. I'd like to know more about the study you mentioned. and why I never heard of it before. Do you think the library here would be able to get us a copy of the journal? Do you remember what publication it was in? Whoa, 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 Andrea said. One question at a time. Yes, I think this could be a past life. The journal is out of print. I'm not sure if the library, especially a small one like Catalina Public, would have the old issues. This place isn't any bigger than a minute, but we could find out. The friends turned with determination, walked up the beach, and stepped onto Crescent Street again. Andrea grabbed a map from the information booth. The library was just around the corner on Sumner Street. As they rounded the corner of Sumner, making their way to the library, a golf cart nearly ran them over. Eve and Andrea looked at each other in shock as they burst into laughter. I can see the headline now. It reads, Two prominent hypnotherapists killed by deranged golf cart driver, Andrea said, lifting her fingers into the proverbial quotation marks in the air. Or maybe, Catalina smog control kills? They giggled as they approached the library. The small wooden historic marker stood in the grassy yard in front of the building. The library, like all of the buildings in Avalon, was a charming old structure. It had been built at the turn of the 19th century. Its clapboard wood front was painted white one too many times, and it had contrasting pale green, ornate Victorian-style trim. The sign on the door read, Closed on Monday. Andrea and Eve looked at each other with their mouths hanging open. Is it crazy for a public library to be closed on Monday? Andrea gawked at the sign. Well, that shoots that idea down. Let's go see if we can buy a cassette recorder. I wonder if there's a Radio Shack in town. Andrea gave Eve a look that clearly meant, if the library is closed on Monday, do you really think they have a Radio Shack? The friends laughed and walked back to Crescent Street, then to the Visitors Bureau. They found out Andrea was right. No Radio Shack. However, there was a shop on Crescent that had little tape decks at large prices, which they paid. Andrea and Eve went to lunch with blank tapes and a tape player cradled inside a cute little shopping bag. Armstrong's Seafood on the Bay was an open-aired restaurant overlooking Avalon Bay. They sat on the planked deck of the restaurant in comfortable, thick cushioned chairs, soaking up the sun and listening to the cry of the seagulls overhead. While eating their salads, Andrea asked, Eve, if you don't mind, I would like you to regress me first. I trust you more than anyone I've ever trained. I'm sure I wouldn't want anyone but you to do this type of work with me, scared or not. I know you can do this. Eve? She must have caught the doubt that had entered Eve's mind. Why would you want to be regressed? You're not having physically damaging dreams. I have a feeling, like I said earlier, and if I'm connected, it's a good idea for the sake of clarity that I go first. You have shared very little detail about the experiences. I have yet to read your journal. But Eve, I have this feeling. Her green eyes were shaded from the sun, but Eve could see Andrea's eyebrows draw together slightly, pleading over the rim of her sunglasses. All right, but I reserve the right to stop at any time if you're in danger of physical manifestation. One mark on your body, Andrea, and I will pull the plug on this little experiment. Andrea nodded with the slightest of movements. To a stranger, the agreement would have gone unnoticed. Let's be sure that we stop and pick up a spiral notebook. Maybe at the grocery store next to the hotel? I'd like to be sure that we have a written record as well. Even with the cassette recordings in my sessions, I still take notes. Just like the teacher said, Eve gave a small grin and a wink in Andrea's direction. They finished eating and returned to the hotel. There was no sign of apprehension in Andrea's expression as they entered the room. Its only window faced the courtyard. People milled about, talking outside, so Eve decided to make sure they had complete privacy, closing the wooden shutters and then pulling the curtains closed. Eve flipped the switch on the wall next to the bed. The gas fireplace ignited. The spark flashed into blue and gold flames that danced around the imitation logs. The closed brass and glass doors that covered the hearth shimmered in a multitude of colors. It drew Eve's attention, and she stood there, staring into the flames. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of The Mark of a Druid, and stop back again. Pick up the next episode at rhondacarpenter.com or themarkofadruid.com. So until next time, thanks, and take care.